Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. It's time for part four in our series, The Vatican Centuries, a programme written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett, in which we take you back in time to rediscover some of the lives and legends of the people and places that went into the making of the Vatican down the centuries. In the last episode, you heard how the apostles, Peter and Paul, were martyred in Rome, and how Peter's burial place became a centre of pilgrimage, and in time the heart of the Christian Church. Today we move on to the time of Constantine, who turned the Vatican into a building site, the focal point of which was St. Peter's tomb. Stay tuned.
The Roman Empire was moving ever closer to collapse. The 3rd century was characterized by anarchy and civil war. The Emperor Diocletian attempted to salvage the crumbling state by overhauling the administration and dividing the empire into east and west.
History has shown that Christianity was not even indirectly responsible for the decline and fall. The rot had set in already.
Yet at this time it was seen to be a danger. The pernicious error of the Christians, declared an edict of the time, has thrown the whole universe into confusion.
And so Christians lived through the worst persecution the Church had known. The popes were killed or exiled, the clergy were imprisoned, the sacred books were burnt, Christian property was confiscated.
Until one day, a young man saw a vision, and Rome became a Christian city.
The young man was Constantine.
Born in the Roman province of Moesia in the year 288 AD, son of Constantius Chlorus and Helena, Constantine was educated in the East and served as a soldier under Diocletian and Galerius. On his father's death in York in 306, the legions acclaimed Constantine emperor. But Galerius only granted him the title of Caesar, or sub-emperor of the West. The other contender was Maxentius.
In 312, the two engaged in battle at the Milvian Bridge. Constantine was victorious. Afterwards, he told of the vision he had seen in the sky, a cross with the words, "With this sign, conquer." Constantine had the cross inscribed on the shields of his troops, and the day was his.
The African rhetorician Lactantius, who was tutor to Constantine's eldest son, has left us an account of the historic battle at the Milvian Bridge.
Already civil war had broken out between Constantine and Maxentius. Although Maxentius remained at Rome, an oracle had predicted that he would die if he crossed the city gates, the war was conducted by his able commanders. His forces were superior to those of his adversary. They clashed, and Maxentius' troops held the advantage up until the time when Constantine, prepared either to win or to die, brought all his forces close to Rome and encamped near the Milvian Bridge. It was near the 28th of October, the anniversary of Maxentius' accession to the throne and the celebration of his completion of 5 years of reign. During his sleep, Constantine was directed that God's heavenly sign should be inscribed on the soldiers' shields before they should begin the battle. He did as he was commanded, and he had inscribed on the shields the name of Christ by means of an X that was crossed by an I curved over at the top. Armed with this sign, his soldiers stood to arms, and the hand of God was stretched over the fray.
Constantine was now supreme in the West. He met Licinius, victor in the East, and together they issued the Edict of Milan, which granted religious freedom to all.
Constantine himself did not immediately become a Christian. Indeed, he was only baptized on his deathbed. But he protected Christianity and did all he could to promote it. He was no saint, but he was an acute statesman and saw in the new religion a force and a unity, which was what the empire needed. He opted for Christianity.
Right from the start, he concerned himself with the controversies of the early church. He attempted to heal the breach between the Christians of the Roman Church and the Donatists. And in 325, he called the first ecumenical council at Nicaea in Asia Minor to combat the Arian heresy.
Around the year 328, he had the seat of the empire transferred to Byzantium, which he wanted to call New Rome, but which became, inevitably, Constantinople. 3 years before he died, in 337, Constantine proclaimed Christianity the state religion. Christian Rome was born.
Some years before he left Rome for the East, the first Christian emperor performed an historic task. On the Vatican Hill, for many centuries, had stood a temple to Apollo. In the year 323 AD, Constantine destroyed the pagan temple and erected the first Basilica of St. Peter's.
Just what did Constantine see when he decided to build a basilica over Peter's tomb? A small pillared shrine, or memorial. In the upper part, there was an opening into which pilgrims put their heads when they prayed. In the lower half, there was a hole into which they let down handkerchiefs and other small objects to be sanctified by contact with the apostle's tomb.
According to the 8th century Liber Pontificalis, Constantine exhumed the body of Peter in the presence of Pope Sylvester. He then enshrined it in a silver case, enclosed within a sarcophagus of Cyprian brass. Over this he placed a large gold cross, weighing 150 pounds. He then restored the body to its original tomb, over which he erected an altar and a vaulted chamber, faced on the inside with plates of gold.
A thought which might occur to the practical modern mind is, why did Constantine build his basilica on the slope of a hill? Obviously at great cost and labour, when there must have been plenty of other, more reasonable sites available.
The answer is simple. At the time, there was still an ancient horror of disturbing the dead. So that rather than move the tomb elsewhere, Constantine cut into the side of the hill and built a vast platform on the lower slope, leaving St. Peter's tomb as the central feature of his building. The shrine stood isolated above the pavement of the basilica, until later the high altar was built over it.
Constantine did, in fact, commit the act of violatio sepulchri, for he dug down into the ancient cemetery beneath the hill and disturbed a great number of tombs, some of which he even cut off at the top of their vaulting.
No doubt he salved his conscience by explaining that the end justified the means, and, we are told, even worked on the building himself, carrying away, in a symbolic gesture, 12 basket loads of earth in honour of the 12 apostles.
If you enjoyed part 4 of the Vatican Centuries, be sure to tune in at this same time next week for the next in this series of programmes, written and presented by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.